that head-to-head could be absolutely huge going down the way.
All right, we're trying to figure out what happened, Coach, to the run defense of the Miami Dolphins the last couple weeks, giving up over 200 yards. And, man, things don't get any easier with Justin Forsett and those five guys blocking for him. He's averaging 5.6 yards on average per carry. Crazy numbers. So I know what the game plan is. Plus, Joe Flacco's got a strong arm to throw it down the field. What do you think? What's your take on this game, Coach?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a great game. I do a show every week in Baltimore, obviously, and they're all abuzz after a tough loss to Philip Rivers. Their biggest concern, because you're right, that when they're balanced and can run the ball, and then Joe Flacco throw after that, and their run defense is outstanding. Now, part of its reasons it's outstanding because everybody's throwing the ball because it's the worst secondary in the National Football League. So that's going to be the challenge. Can Ryan Tannehill, who we've been talking about Ryan for the better part of the season now and how much right. better he's gotten, can he take advantage of that weak secondary? Because obviously the defense is going to have its hands full, all but at home, with the balance of the Baltimore Ravens. If they can make the Ravens one-dimensional, and if Tannehill can hurt them down the field with that bad, bad secondary, then they can have their way with the Baltimore Ravens.
Coach, we've talked about this forever. It's a broken record. We've already had a bunch of calls this morning, and it's called deep ball frustration, where they just can't complete deep passes, not even last week against the Jets, for a lot of different reasons. But at some point, when you keep hearing about these secondaries having all these issues, you got to at least throw it deep, don't you, Coach?
Yeah, and this is – I do my toxic every year. I just did the three-quarter mark. As you know, we've talked about it before. It's, I think, one of the major predictors of success because it combines the turnover differential, which we've always known is huge,
right.
and the differential and explosive plays. And right now, Miami's middle of the pack. You know, they're fourth in the league in terms of giving up defensive big plays, but they're 26th in the league and generate them. So it's a net zero. You know, they need to, they could, because they're not giving up big plays, if they could find a little more offense in terms of the big play, because they're about the same in the turnover differential. They're a plus three, which is good, but they're 26th in the league and generating big plays, and you need more. Otherwise, you run the risk of bleeding to death slowly, so to speak,
yeah.
in terms of getting, you got to do it with those 10, 12, 13-play drives, and your defense isn't necessarily putting you on a lot of short field. So you got to find a way going forward. Clearly, that's the one thing as you look at Miami. They can find a little bit more of that deep ball. That would take them a long way to making the playoffs and maybe going in, you know, deep into the playoffs.
All right, Coach, I've asked you a zillion Ryan Tannehill questions. I got to ask you what you like the most of what he's doing and what needs to improve the most, if you don't mind, after breaking down all the quarterbacks in the NFL.
Well, he's showing that he's got the full range of throws. I'm seeing a patience in the pocket, the ability or an improving ability to move around in the pocket. I see a lot that I like. And there's, you know, we've been doing this a while now, Joe. I've been going, oh, you didn't like Ryan Tannehill. I did like Ryan Tannehill. I didn't like him as the eighth pick of the draft. I thought he was in that category of, you know, Jake Locker Gabbert and
Manziel, maybe. Yeah.
And they all should have been in the early second round.
Okay.
I just thought he was taken too high in the draft based on what he had done and what we had seen. They all had potential, and clearly he's shown he's the best of that group. But I like what I see in terms of his growth. They do need to develop more of that deep ball of picking and choosing your shots to take down the field, what he's been able to do outside the field. And obviously the offensive line, which I think has actually been pretty good, is still coming around, so you can't disassociate what's going on around him. I think he's playing very, very well. And what I like is even this late in the game, he continues to get better. Obviously wasn't the best game the other night in New York, but I think there's still an upside for Ryan Tannehill.
Okay. Just one follow-up question, because all we seem to do, I guess they do in every city, is a quarterback, but is he a top 15? Is he at the top half of the league for starting quarterbacks, in your opinion?
Oh, boy. Yeah, you know, you put it in tier. You have the big five, you know, that obviously the Pro Bowlers, the Bradys, the Breezes, the Aaron Rodgers yeah. and the like. And then the next group, the proven you have, whether it's a Matt Ryan, Flacco, you have to put in there. Even Eli Manning, as much as they're struggling. Andrew Luck, that group. He probably is on the border of that next tier, that 10 to 15 group. I don't know if he's absolutely there now, maybe. And if not, he's approaching it.
Okay, fair enough. All right, I got to move on to this Cleveland thing because it looks like the whole national world that covers the NFL is split on this Hoyer-Manziel thing. I just wanted to get your take on it real quickly on who should start with this 7-5 Browns team.
Well, for me, it's different than I've been asked that all week long. What should the Browns do? And I have to disassociate myself from what I think of Johnny. I don't like Johnny Manziel. I don't think his skills are going to translate into the NFL. And I think he's got a long way to go maturity-wise to know what it is to play in this league. I mean, you know, you finally get into the game, you score a running touchdown in a losing effort, and you come up with the money sign. Come on, man. I mean, just show a little bit more. Forget the class. Show a little bit more intelligence than that. So that concerns me. Now, that aside, they took him with the 22nd pick. Brian Hoyer is a backup. You'd love to have him on your team as that. He's the same. He's Drew Stanton. He's McCowan. He's Kyle Orton. He's a good, solid backup. You're not going to win a championship with him. And you drafted a guy with the 22nd pick. They desperately need to know if Johnny Manziel is going to be a guy they want to go with. They need to find out over the next four games whether he shows the signs that he can play or not. Now, I understand at 7-5 and in the middle of the playoff hunt, you go with the guy that kind of got you there. And I understand Brian Hoyer saying, hey, you know, I'm the reason this team's 7-5. Well, you're also the reason that team isn't 9-3 because of the interception. He's a, right. He's a sub 60%, one touchdown for one interception guy. That's who he is. That's who he's going to be. You can't win a championship with that. I understand them going with him if they lose to Indianapolis, and they likely will. Now it's 7-6. Do you spend the last at least three games seeing if Johnny Manziel can play? If not, you get to the end of the season. Now, do you pay Brian Hoyer? He's not going to get one of these $100 million contracts, but he's going to get, if you choose to keep him, an Alex Smith contract, you know, or you dump it all together and say, okay, we're going with Johnny Manziel. We only saw 8 plays out of him, but right. We're going to go with Johnny Manziel because we drafted him the 22nd pick of the draft. That's a bad place to be.
And you know the other problem is for Hoyer, and I go back and forth, but I'd probably start Hoyer in this game myself, but man, he's got to know he's on a short leash the rest of the way. Is that tough to play under that situation?
Oh, sure it is, looking over your shoulder. But to me, the worst-case scenario for Cleveland, let's say Hoyer goes in, and let's say he does what he's done in the past. They slop around and right. They're kind of okay, and they do some things. And you look at the, you know, outside the Colts, they play the Bengals, who they've beaten, the Panthers, and then the Ravens. So yeah, I got a tough time seeing them getting to 7 to 10 wins. But let's say they upset the Colts, and they've already beaten the Bengals, and you're rolling along. And whether you make the playoffs or not, you play just good enough and you get to 9, maybe you get to 10 wins and the fans are cranked up, but you got a quarterback that you know is a backup.
Yeah.
That you can't. Now what do you do? That's a tough offseason.
All right, and I got to ask you about another a head coaching situation, and I'm always curious to get your take on this stuff with Jim Harbaugh. So the general manager's daughter tweets something that she wished she could have back. The owner – or at least the kid or the family, whatever he is, comes out and apologizes to the fans for an embarrassing loss, which would piss me off if I was a coach. Like, wasn't like you were trying to embarrass the fans. And you've won as much as you have as Jim Harbaugh. Man, it doesn't look good that he's staying in San Francisco, Coach.
Yeah, it doesn't. You don't, you know, and Trent Baalke was obviously embarrassed by it, but sitting around the dinner table, she heard something.
She
just developed that opinion on her own. Jed York does run that organization. I think he's done a magnificent job, but you're right. I don't want my owner commenting after a game. I know we're in the tweetosphere and all that kind of stuff, but that's just a bad precedent to even set for the players. So that tells you it's not right there. Having said that, Jim Harbaugh is likely to become the first $10 million coach because there will be teams that covet him when the season's over, not withstanding Oakland or whatever changes are going to come about. Yeah. He's going to be a coveted guy. But Jim Harbaugh is like, as we said, he's the Lou Holtz and the Bill Parcells of those guys knew their – you know, you have a short shelf life with teams because you wear them out. And Bill Walsh truly believed that can happen. He usually thought it was at the 10-year level. But Jim Harbaugh, his style, and you got to admit, it's been a winning style for them, but it has grinded on them, both the players and management. It will be interesting to see what goes forward.
Coach, I wouldn't let – I don't know how you feel about this, but if the team comes to you and says, hey, we're gonna trade you as a coach to a team, I'd say forget that. I'm not giving up my first-round pick for where I plan on going. You either keep me as a coach or fire me, but I'm not going to let you trade me. Do you agree with that?
Well, you don't have any say. You really don't, other than like the player, the first-round pick that says, I'm not going to that team. I'm not, because you could look at it and you're going to have a say in terms of the team that you go to.
Okay, so you're saying that
it's not going to be a first-round pick. The league is going to step up at some point, even if you have a kind of deal. We've seen that before where there's an agreement that it's for this. No, that's not enough. There's a bit of a precedent when we saw the draft compensation of Parcells when he went from the New England to the Jets, and then Belichick from the Jets to New England, and then Gruden went from Oakland to Tampa Bay. So there is a bit of a precedent, I think 2-3s, something like that. John Gruden may have been for more. So you're right. It's good news, bad news. I'm going someplace else because obviously I may covet doing that. They're going to give me a new contract. It's like these players to get traded, and it's likely to be north of $10 million a year.
Wow.
So that's good news. The bad news is, yeah, we're going to give up some of the picks that I desperately need. If you go to Oakland, that is a mess, although I do have my quarterback because I think he'd like Derek Carr. Khalil Mack on defense, but everything else, you can scrub the decks and scorched earth, start over. I'd like to have a couple draft choices going forward to help me do that.
Brian, before I let you go, give me an idea what you expect in this game Sunday down here between the Ravens and Dolphins. Any feel for what we can expect to see?
Well, and it goes right to the heart of what you talked about. I think it's going to take the big plays. I think that defense is going to make a tough running for the Miami Dolphins. And I think the matchup of Joe Flacco trying to get the ball down the field to Steve Smith, Torrey Smith, Owen Daniels, because I think they may find the running the ball is a little tougher than they've had. I think it's going to come down to the team that makes the most big plays, which is going to be tough on Miami. I think they're capable of doing that against that secondary. It's just not something they've done so far.
All right. Coach, always good stuff. Thank you so much for coming on.
Sounds great.
All right, Brian Billick joining us this morning here on Sports Radio 560.